Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. Let's go ahead and dive right in to some moments of quiet together, a period of quiet. If you'd like, beginning with just taking a few deep breaths. And turning attention from without to within. Turning to this quiet, still center, which we all share. And it is here that we rest. No matter what might be floating across the surface of the mind, your mind actually knows where to go. And so maybe imagining your mind just dropping beneath a layer of fog, if that mind is busy on the surface, to this quiet, still space within. Connecting with your willingness. The small part that is asked of us. Connecting with our willingness. And you can imagine we're doing this collectively as a group. Giving our willingness to Holy Spirit. Trusting that Holy Spirit will guide us every step of the way for where two or more are joined. The ego just falls away. The belief in ego just falls away. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And again, if you'd like, taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Again, welcome everyone. We are in the Manual for Teachers. If you have the CE edition, it's page 1593. It's number 7, Should Healing Work Be Repeated? In the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it is also part 7. It's page 22 in the manual. Should healing be repeated? All right, let's dive in. This question really answers itself. Healing cannot be repeated. If the patient is healed, as has already been said, what remains to heal him from? And if the healing is certain, as we have already said it is, what is there to repeat? For a teacher of God to remain concerned about the result of healing is to limit the healing. It is now the teacher of God himself whose mind needs to be healed, and it is this he must facilitate. He is now the patient, and he must so regard himself. He has made a mistake and must be willing to change his mind about it. He lacks the trust that makes forgiving truly, and so he has not received the benefit of his gift. You know, it's funny. I'll just say a few words and see if anybody has any questions or comments before we go to the next paragraph. But I've shared before how I find it funny, like funny at times, that our reading in the study group corresponds perfectly to some lesson or something that I'm experiencing in my life. And one of the lessons, I feel like my learning edge lately, has been surrounding doubt. And for instance, getting super clear guidance, like super clear guidance to not worry about something, but then worrying about it anyway. And like, what is that? Like, what is that pull? What is that absolute addiction to want to just go back into your own strength, really? And it had occurred to me that beneath doubt is an active denial of God. And it's just so funny to me that this section, I'll point it out when we get to it, but we're talking about doubt a number of times. And I just find it so funny, again, the synchronicity of reading about this. So that sentence, I think it's sentence number 5, for a teacher of God to remain concerned about what the result of healing is to limit the healing. What is that but doubt? What is that but ongoing worry? And if we find ourselves lapsing into doubt, lapsing into worry, lapsing into concern, we now recognize that we are the patient, we are the student, and it's our mind we must recognize that is in need of healing. We've made a mistake and simply need to change our mind about it. And this is where, again, our trust is building. It's growing as we advance through our own curriculum. But it's just, I feel like the doubt and the lack of trust go hand in hand. And we're just slowly learning that we don't have to doubt and that we can trust. Anybody have any thoughts or comments about this first paragraph before we go on? John and Michelle.
Yeah, I've always, you know, questioned this too, in a sense, and had not my doubts, but I was wondering if you could replace the word healing with just like praying, which, I mean, we do kind of all the time, it seems like, for people that are ill. You know, it's like, well, we'll pray for them more than once. Mm-hmm. We don't just pray that they're healed and stop praying for them. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of a little confused on that there.
Great question. So your confusion is exactly where, like,
well, is it okay to pray for them that they feel better, knowing that you've already maybe sent them some healing? I don't know if we've already performed a miracle on somebody in this respect that we're talking here.
Right. So right.
That might be a little different. I don't know.
Well, that's a great question. Like, you know, whether it's, you know, I think of how like Helen Schuckman prayed to the minds of the other person. Like, you know, she didn't just ask God for their healing. She prayed to their mind. And this, again, it's all our curriculum. It's all the development of trust. And we still perceive ourselves as separate. And so it seems like things are stretched out in linear time. And so number one, of course, there's nothing wrong with, you know, praying for somebody in an ongoing manner or for repeatedly asking for healing. Now, this, you know, it's saying healing can't be repeated. Does it mean that we're there and that we're going to get that and that we're just going to accept that right away? No, like, of course, this, again, I see the theme of doubt in this paragraph. I see the word doubt showing up at least in the next two paragraphs. So the doubt is part of this process. And I feel like that is maybe where, for instance, you can say, even with your question, John, about like, should I keep praying? Should I keep turning something over? Should I keep asking for help? Like, yes, in that I have not yet been ready to accept the answer or accept the healing. And so in a way that repeated asking is me trying to bring, you know, trying to align my mind, or being willing to align my mind with the Holy Spirit. But at some point, I feel like there's a switch in that we might recognize that even though, again, appearances might deceive, instead of saying like, oh, help me, or make this person well, or whatever that is, the prayer might change to only the truth is true. Like the truth in this person has not changed. This part, like, you know, with going there with the joining with the truth of who that person is and reaffirming that. So I don't know if that came out. Does that help a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does actually.
Cool. Cause that's what just comes forward for me is that I've caught myself many times handing the same problem over and over. And if I'm doing it over and over, what is that but an indication that I keep picking it back up? And so that affirmation of like reminding myself that like I've handed it over, I can trust now, to me is kind of like the next, at least in my experience, that's been sort of the next little step. But I like your question, Dawn. Thank you. Michelle.
Mine was just a quick comment. I found that doubt goes very, it goes with guilt. I've been finding very much so they seem to go together, and it just seems to be that you're doubting because of that guilt. And it just, like you said, you used the word compelling. I found that. And it just reminded me of just one little quick course quote that I came across recently. And it says that it's the Holy Spirit's mission to remove all doubt and trace of guilt from our minds. Mm. I love that.
The Holy Spirit's mission to remove mission. All mission.
To remove all doubt and trace of guilt.
All doubt and trace minds. Of guilt. That is amazing.
I can't say where it is now. I'd have to look it up in the web edition again, but I remember coming across that and it stuck in my head and I was like, oh, doubt and guilt. Yes.
Thank you so much for that, Michelle. That's so helpful. And again, there in that statement that the Holy Spirit's mission is to remove all doubt and trace of guilt. It's the Holy Spirit's mission. We don't do it. You know, it's not up to me to remove the guilt or the doubt. So we're going to get to, when we get to paragraph 3, I have something underlined with a big wow, but this is also another kind of for you, you know, in that category that the Holy Spirit does this for us. It's our job to, you know, get out of the way, to turn to Holy Spirit. So thank you for that beautiful connection, and yes to the guilt and the doubt going together. That's powerful. Dave.
Just to follow up with that, it says it is impossible that this mission would fail.
Yay.
So I've run across that statement a few times when, you know, my doubt was in full bloom, and it's kind of like, oh yeah, that helps take the pressure off, you know?
It sure does. It's impossible that this mission should fail. Wow.
There's a lookup on a searchable edition of the Course in Miracles at the Miracle Distribution Center. And that's in chapter 13, section 11, paragraph 5. And I think it's sentence 1.
Okay, cool. Thank you. That's definitely the FIP edition. So
yes, FIP.
Fantastic. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Wow. And it just reminds me too, just to add to this conversation on doubt, I shared this story with all of you, and I don't know how many weeks ago, but my chicken experienced a healing. Like I literally had 3 vet appointments to help her transition. The third time I actually, because the first 2, I couldn't go through with it. The third time when I put her in the pet carrier, she bolted out and I was like, all right, not time. And she had a healing because of an energy healer that I was working with. The energy healing didn't do a thing for me, but it healed my chicken. And I found myself being like, this can't be. I was just about to put her down. Like, how can she be healed? And then I caught myself and I was like, what am I doing? Like, why am I arguing with this? Why am I denying this healing? And that was back in March or April. And this chicken is still running around. Like, she's a little spring chicken. She's going to be 7 next year. So she's old in chicken years, and she's doing fantastic. So, it's yeah, this is where my learning edge has been. So let's keep reading, because this is good. Whenever a teacher of God has tried to be a channel for healing, he has succeeded. Should he be tempted to doubt this, he should not repeat his previous effort. That was already maximal, because the Holy Spirit so accepted it and so used it. Now the teacher of God has only one course of action to follow. He must use his reason to tell himself that he has given the problem to one who cannot fail, and recognize that his own uncertainty is not love, but fear, and therefore hate. His position has thus become untenable, for he is offering hate to one to whom he offered love. This is impossible. Having offered love, only love can be received. Now here, so before I said, sure, if you want to keep, you know, handing it over or praying for somebody. Now, number one, we always have to ask, right? If we're guided, we're going to be told exactly what to do. Here, however, it's saying, if we've tried to be a channel for healing, we've succeeded. Whether or not our body's eyes are reporting so. Should he be tempted to doubt this, he should not repeat his previous effort, because that was maximal. The Holy Spirit accepted it and used it. So now we use reason. So now we talk to ourselves to tell ourselves that we have given the problem to the one who cannot fail. We've given it to the Holy Spirit. And we can recognize our own uncertainty, our own doubt isn't love, but fear, and therefore hate. So that's kind of like the next piece of this, I guess. If we find, again, I'm always about allowing ourselves to be where we are, but taking this teaching, we can pause and stop ourselves and say, okay, wait a second. Like, I was willing to be a channel for healing that must have worked on some level. And because I gave it to the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit knows how to use it. So if I'm doubting, now that's my lesson, you know, now that is where I have to work. And that's where I have to look, because of my own uncertainty being a reflection of fear and therefore hate. The ongoing, I don't remember if it says this in this section, it might, but the ongoing, yeah, it's coming up. Continued concern has the appearance of love, right? Like when we're concerned about somebody in an ongoing manner, we worry about them, we're concerned about them. It says clearly, and again, we'll get to this, that's attack. That continued concern is attack. It has all the appearance of love. Now, it doesn't mean we're not compassionate and we're not loving, but when we worry, that's fear. That's just another form of fear, and therefore an attack. Oof, okay. Any comments or questions about paragraph 2 and this idea of using reason? Steve, I see your hand.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
My ego is going boom. My head's exploding on that very first sentence where it says, whenever a teacher of God has tried to be a channel for healing, he has succeeded. I've always held dear to myself that if I try to do something, I've set myself up for failure. You know, that's, to me, that's a limiting comment or it gives me an out. But here, you know, we're being told that all we have to do is try to be this channel for healing, and we've succeeded. Mm-hmm. So I think I got a little wrestling to do with that one, but because I've always thought that, you know, if I try to do something, I've given myself an out, or if you know, it's just a kind of a word game I play in my head. But I've done it forever. And it's like, okay, here's a reboot ready to come.
That's a reboot for sure. And you're picking up on that word tried, when we've tried to be a channel for healing. Cause again, it's to me that trying again means the channel for healing is recognizing that it's not us, but something through us, you know, that channel, it's again, the Holy Spirit through us. And yeah, that we've succeeded. That's a really good sentence to wrestle with, Steve, and to chew on.
But then I think about that as well. And just the fact that we are trying means that we've opened that channel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, holy cow, we can't go wrong. So.
And as Dave said, it's impossible that this mission should fail. Like it's right. Our success is guaranteed. It is guaranteed.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Dave.
Real quick comment. To me, the trying means that we're just willing.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That's great.
Not that it's, I mean, the word try implies that it's kind of our effort, but, and that's where it gets confusing, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, Dave, great connection. You're absolutely right. Willing, that's it. The trying is the willing. Whatever teacher of God has been willing to be a channel for healing, he has succeeded. Awesome, Dave, thank you. What's going on in the chat? I'm just checking if I'm assuming you're all good. I can't even see it. Oh, good. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Don. Any other comments yet or questions before we go to paragraph 3? Okay, let's dive in. It is in this that the teacher of God must trust. So just to back up for a second, having offered the last sentence of the previous paragraph, having offered love, only love can be received. Next paragraph. It is in this that the teacher of God must trust. This is what is really meant by the statement that the one responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. The teacher of God is a miracle worker because he gives the gifts he has received. Yet he must first accept them. He need do no more, nor is there more that he could do. By accepting healing, he can give it. If he doubts this, let him remember who gave the gift and who received it. Thus is his doubt corrected. He thought the gifts of God could be withdrawn. That was a mistake, but hardly one to stay with. And so the teacher of God can only recognize it for what it is and let it be corrected for him. This is where I have sentence 8, thus is his doubt corrected, underlined with a wow next to it. So if you remember last week, we, at the end of the previous section, section 6 is healing certain, we highlighted a sentence that says it is he, so it is the Holy Spirit who accepts gifts for us, and it is the Holy Spirit in the mind of the giver who gives the gift to him. So the Holy Spirit accepts the gift for you and gives the gift for you, which was another thing that the Holy Spirit does for us. So here, when we catch ourselves, when we can see doubt clearly, and that's, again, that's our part, it's to seek and to find those blocks. So if we're noticing doubt arise, if we're noticing guilt or fear or whatever form it is, for me lately, it's been doubt. If we're noticing the doubt arise, it's our job to see it and to bring it to Holy Spirit. So here in this, I'm at the very end of this page in the CE. By accepting healing, he can give it. If he doubts this, let him remember who gave the gift and who received it. So the Holy Spirit gave the gift and the Holy Spirit received it for us. Thus is his doubt corrected. So that gets a big old wow out of me, because I wouldn't have ever connected those two things. Doubt gets corrected by remembering that the Holy Spirit gives the gifts for us and accepts the gifts for us. So Holy Spirit has already accepted the gifts of God for us. And just by remembering that is our doubt corrected on some level. That just blows my mind. Thinking that the gifts of God could be withdrawn is a mistake and hardly one to stay with, and allow that mistake to be corrected for us. Questions, comments? I love how it says, so I'm just going to back up one more time. The very last sentence of that paragraph 2, having offered love, only love can be received. It is in this that the teacher of God must trust. This is what is really meant by the statement that the one responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept atonement for himself. The footnote says, as interpreted, this means that the miracle worker need do no more then accept the atonement, because once he accepts it, he can give it. And once he gives it, it will be received, all through the Holy Spirit, not of our small selves. Anybody have anything to share? So far. So
yeah, just,
Jason, hi.
Yeah, hey. No, this has been a great reading so far, just as proof. I want to show you my highlighted page. It's almost the entire page is highlighted.
I love
it. And I have it bookmarked, even though I'm not in a manual for teachers now, because it seems so consistent. I'm on chapter 8, actually, in the text, and on lesson 61 today. Uh-huh. And it's so consistent that we are just the vehicle, or the body is just the vehicle, the communication device. Mm-hmm. And not the doer. And so a doubt thought, Eckhart would say, is just an egoic thought. So as long as I don't identify with that thought, then there's no doubt. Mm-hmm. The doubt is just a thought form. It's a manifestation of my conditioned thinking from my past. Mm-hmm. So that's going to take some time to unwind, you know, mm-hmm. for me. I didn't wake up on a park bench, so I don't know. Right. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for sharing that. You know, another thing that I'll just add, you know, with those thoughts about, like, you know, not identifying with the doubt, like just seeing it as a thought and not identifying with it. I've found that I don't know how to do that. I can try, but it'll creep in, you know, my doubt will show up in some other way because it's there. So instead of me trying to, because there's so many, like, I'm thinking of, you know, I mean, I'm a counselor by training. There's so many therapeutic techniques of, like, seeing our thoughts go by like clouds, you know, not identifying with them. It's a big part of, like, mindfulness-based treatments. And so, but I've found that, like, instead, let me own it because it's there. And because I'm owning it, now I'm seeking and finding that block to the awareness of love's presence, and I'm taking that block to the Holy Spirit. And so again, this is where it tickles me, because I've been working with this doubt and owning it and being like, Holy Spirit, like, I got doubt. And then we read this tonight, you know, I open the book and, like, here it says how doubt is corrected. Like, I just find that timing, you know, such a synchronicity. So thank you. And it must have been, I know Eckhart Tolle, I think, had it kind of tough before waking up on a park bench, but it did seem kind of instant for him. So good for him. thanks, Jason. Anybody else have any questions or comments? All right, let's keep going. Paragraph number 4. Ooh, this is good. One of the more difficult temptations to recognize is that to doubt a healing because of the appearance of continuing symptoms is a mistake in the form of lack of trust. As such, it is an attack. Usually, it seems to be just the opposite. It does appear unreasonable at first to be told that continued concern is attack. It has all the appearances of love. Yet love without trust is impossible, and doubt and trust cannot coexist. And hate must be the opposite of love, regardless of the form it takes. Doubt not the gift, and it is impossible to doubt its results. I'm going to read that one more time. Doubt not the gift, and it is impossible to doubt its result. This is the certainty that gives God's teachers the power to be miracle workers, for they have put their trust in him. And that is the transfer of trust that we're all on the pathway towards, is transferring our trust from our small selves, from thinking I know, from thinking that we need to control, you know, do, versus putting complete trust in the Holy Spirit and having that certainty. So this is a quote that's I've just known for a long time, because I've always thought it's been so powerful and so helpful. The temptation one of the most difficult temptations to recognize is that to doubt a healing because of the appearance of continuing symptoms is a mistake in the form of lack of trust. As such, it is an attack. So again, it seems that continued concern would be love because it has all the appearance of love. And yet continued concern is attack because love without trust is impossible. So this is, again, where I go back to, like, I don't even know how to love. Like, I don't know how to do anything. It's the Holy Spirit through each one of us, through each one of us that does these things for us. And therefore, you know, we learn. And so maybe we can all think of, and I'm sure this is quite easy, someone that we know, maybe ourselves, our own body, another body. If there's a continuing symptom, bringing our mind back to remembering that the healing that we've called upon the Holy Spirit, and therefore the healing is certain, and the appearance of continuing symptoms, if we doubt the healing because of those ongoing symptoms, it's just lack of trust, which again is fear, is guilt, is the attack, is the doubt. This is big. It's a powerful teaching. Comments, questions so far? What's coming up for you? So far, so good.
I'll say something.
Oh, go for it, John.
Well, I did a Power of Eight healing for Jacqueline a couple of weeks back. And actually, one of the ladies asked me, well, how's she doing? I was like, she's fine. I mean, it was like, nothing's changed, but, you know, she got the healing. That's what I said. Uh-huh. And I accept that too, you know. You went through dementia, it's like, it hasn't changed, but that doesn't mean she didn't receive the miracle.
Right. And yeah, that's our work. That's our work to remember that. That's where we bring our minds back to that truth that even if it seems like nothing's changed on the surface, that healing was received. Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. Next paragraph. Let's go for it. Paragraph number 5. The real basis for doubt about the outcome of any problem that has been given to God's teacher for resolution is always self-doubt. I want to read that one more time. The real basis for doubt about the outcome of any problem that has been given to God's teacher for resolution is always self-doubt. And that necessarily implies that trust has been placed in an illusory self. For only such a self can be doubted. This illusion can take many forms. Perhaps there is a fear of weakness and vulnerability. Perhaps there is a fear of failure and shame associated with a sense of inadequacy. Perhaps there is a guilty embarrassment stemming from false humility. The form of the mistake is not important. What is important is only the recognition of a mistake as a mistake. And I'll pause there. You know, it's funny, when I was reading this in advance for this call, I got tripped up on the first sentence where it says God's teacher, because teacher is capitalized. And I don't remember hearing the Holy Spirit referred to as God's teacher, but that has to be who it's referring to, because all the other references to the teacher of God, us, are lowercase t. So, and it makes sense. The real basis for doubt about any outcome of a problem that has been given to the Holy Spirit for resolution is always self-doubt. So we're placing trust in an illusory self, and it's only such illusory self that can be doubted. And that illusion, as it says, takes many forms. So we might think that we're weak and vulnerable and afraid of failure. We might feel shameful, inadequate, guilty, embarrassed, all of these things. The forms don't matter. It says, the form of the mistake is not important. What's only important is the recognition that it is a mistake, that whatever it is, however it is that we see ourselves, is a mistake. Whatever way we see ourselves as the small self is a mistake, and that mistake is correctable, because again, we are learning to see. We are learning to see who it is that we truly are. questions or comments or insights so far?
Yeah, I have a quick question. Do you know where the rules for decision section is in FIP or the other book? Because
go ahead.
This chapter goes so well with the rules for decision. And I just heard it. I didn't read it. I read the first page, but I just heard it over again today, somebody talking about it. And I think the first rule is to decide what kind of day I want to have. And I think the second one is I will make no decisions on my own or something like that.
I was going to say it's in the Foundation for Inner Peace. It's chapter 30, part one. And The first rule, the outlook starts with this: today I will make no decisions by myself. And then the second one is, like you said, if I make no decisions by myself, this is the day that will be given me. And it talks about, I guess, other things.
Okay, gotcha. And so I think he also gives something to, if like when I veer off of this path during my day, how do I bring my mind back to the decision of following the rules for decision? Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what it was, but it was so much in line with this paragraph exactly. If I find it, I'll mention it, but I don't have it off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glancing through it, and it talks about just like hoping that we've been wrong, wanting another way to look at this. Perhaps there is another way to look at this. What can I lose by asking? And so there's a lot in there. It is a really good section. And so thank you for bringing our attention back to that. Thank you, Jason. Shall we read the final paragraph? Let's go for it. So again, we just ended with, what's important is only the recognition of a mistake as a mistake. Number six, the final paragraph. The mistake is always some form of concern with the self to the exclusion of the patient. It is a failure. I'm sorry, I'm pausing. Does it say patient in the FIP edition too? Anybody know?
Yes.
It does. Okay, thank you. The mistake is always some form of concern with the self to the exclusion of the patient. It is a failure to recognize him as part of the self, and thus represents a confusion in identity. Conflict about what you are has entered your mind, and you have become deceived about yourself. And you are deceived about yourself because you have denied the source of your creation. If you are offering only healing, you cannot doubt. If you really want the problem solved, you cannot doubt. If you are certain what the problem is, you cannot doubt. Doubt is the result of conflicting wishes. Be sure of what you want, and doubt becomes impossible. So this is bubbling up to my mind at the moment, and so I'm just going to share it, especially since we're at the end of the reading here. Now, what this is saying is that it's not saying like you need to correct your own doubt, but if you're offering only healing, if you really want the problem solved, you're not going to be doubting. Like there just won't be doubt there. If you are certain, there won't be doubt. Doubt is the result of conflicting wishes. Be sure of what you want, and doubt becomes impossible. I had, I feel moved to share this right now. And I don't remember how long ago this was now, a week or so, but I had previously shared that I've been going through another, like, oh, Uma, hi. It's, I'm going through it. What is it? The period of unsettling. The period of unsettling. Oh, I'm so glad you're here. And so I had an experience, whatever it was, like a week ago or so, of getting up in the middle of the night. I couldn't fall back asleep, went to lay on my couch just for like a change of scenery. And as I was laying there, my concern started growing again. I started feeling like the doubt and the fear creeping in. And I don't know how to, this definitely has a lot to do with what we've been talking about with like the Divine Mother, the Black Madonna showing up. I felt my mind, I felt myself able to get very, very quiet. And all of my desire, all of my, everything felt like it just parted. And what was left was a very quiet space. And I found myself in that quiet space with wanting nothing else, asking for the removal of this block to love. Like I authentically and genuinely did not want this anymore. And it was such an authentic moment that makes my other asking times feel conflicted, because this again, like the best that I can describe it is if it felt like something parted in my mind, almost like the monkey mind. The monkey mind parted and got out of the way. And what dropped in was this sincere asking with no other agenda, with no other small self desire, and just wanting healing, wanting this block to be removed. And what I experienced was, I can describe it only in that it seemed like it was an experience of the atonement, like how it's our job again to bring the blocks to Holy Spirit. And then Holy Spirit does something in our minds to remove those blocks, to have that exchange from fear to love. And I actually experienced in my mind, it wasn't anything I saw with my physical eyes, but I experienced two lights, almost like those bursts, like pow, pow, like in cartoons, those bursts. And the light, it happened, one was bigger, one was smaller. And as it faded, I felt the concern melt away. And that came up for me just now reading this, because how it says doubt is the result of conflicting wishes, be sure of what you want and doubt becomes impossible. I felt like in that moment, it was such an authentic asking that was not about making, it wasn't about making the body better. It wasn't about really anything other than just like wanting God, wanting to know and remember the truth by having this block removed. And although I've found the doubt creep in now that it's been like, you know, a week and a half or so later, for a few days, there was, I felt that certainty. And it's that type of thing where when you have it, however long it lasts, it's like, why did I ever try to keep this away? Like, why have I ever tried to deny this? Or why have I ever defended, you know, against this? And then the doubt crept back in. But that's where I spoke to what my, you know, my learning edge is right now and why this reading is so spot on for me. So I just felt like sharing that since we have some time left and since we're at the end of our reading. But it just strikes me that when you are sure of what you want, doubt becomes impossible. That's when there's no conflicting wishes, doubt is not there. So thank you for letting me share that. Insights, comments, questions, what would you like to share? I'm not feeling like we will continue in the next section. I think that's a good place for us to stop for this evening. So we can just keep talking about what we're reading or Joyce.
Yeah. Hi. I don't know how to do this. Okay. Just that the last sentence reminded me of David Hoffmeister. You did an podcast with them.
Yes.
That's regarding the people pleasing.
Yes.
And I remember he mentioned about he had this concentric circle. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Yeah. And the outer circle is perception. Uh-huh. And then feelings underneath it. Mm-hmm. And then thoughts underneath it. And belief. And then at the very center, it's desire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then also with Ken Wapnick, in various audios, he said, what is it that you want? What is exactly what you want? that is your motivation. Mm-hmm. That is your path. Mm. So yeah, so the lesson reminded me of all that. What is it that you want? And above all else, I want peace. Mm-hmm. So that's my two cents.
Beautiful, Joyce. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I love that you brought up those concentric circles, and thank you for reminding me as to what they are, because the fact that I forgot that that desire was in the center, it's like our perceptions, our feelings, our thoughts, our beliefs, it's all layers, but at the center is our desire. What is it that we want? And is it peace? Is it the ego's peace? You know, is it that I want a happy life and everything to be good? Or is it that I want the peace of God? Like, I want God above all else. I want to know my true self, and therefore it will cost, you know, the whole world I see, as the Course says. So thank you for bringing that back in. And also for that Ken Wapnick teaching. That was powerful. Thank you. Jason.
Yeah, this is such an amazing chapter of just this section alone. And I do like what the previous Joyce was sharing about the levels of mind. You know, perception, I believe after perception is, let me see here. I actually have a page that I saved on work. It was actually a Word document, perception. Mm. And then inside doubt was emotion. And inside emotion was thought. Inside thought was belief. And inside, in the very core is desire. And I know that somewhere in the book, it says, you will find truth through your desire, as it was lost by your desire for something else.
Yeah.
So I don't have to doubt truth, I guess. I guess, you know, nothing real can be threatened. So I just have to ask myself, am I real? Well, yeah, I think so. I feel like I'm real. And if this is all a dream, even if it is all a dream, I still have to be real because I'm conscious. There has to be consciousness for the dream to occur. So I feel kind of secure in that idea, knowing that I am conscious, even if I am dreaming, mm-hmm. I still have consciousness. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, somehow that really helps me. And I know I don't speak like an ACIM student all the time, but.
Oh, no, I love what you're saying. I love
the
what
other,
you're saying.
The other thing that after the first paragraph, you guys were talking about, you know, the doubting and, you know, and I was like, well, trust, right? Trust. It's about trust. I'm just the character or the vehicle or the device, the body. I'm not my body, but I perceive myself as the body. And then I knew the word trust had to come up somewhere, and it came up three times. Paragraph three, the first sentence, mm-hmm. paragraph four, the first sentence, mm-hmm. and paragraph five, the second sentence. Mm. Trust, trust, trust. Mm-hmm. and also now I just try to go through the day, and if something I expected to happen didn't happen, then I just say, oh, okay, it wasn't supposed to happen, and I move on. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so easy before. I'd get really wrapped, just wound up about that, you know, about why didn't that guy call? We were supposed to call so I could help him, you know? And I guess the last thing I'll share is I worked with the same therapist for 12 years, and he just retired 3 months ago. And in that period, I took one psychology class in college, uh-huh. but he taught me about, because I'm in 12-step programs, and how to help others. He said, basically you listen 90% of the time or 95% of the time, and then you give certain feedback, but it's really the patient who solves his own problems. Mm-hmm. and also that he, as the therapist, has to let go of the result.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to do that too with my sponsees, whether they use or drink again. That's what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to help someone else. Otherwise, if I get obsessed about that one person that I thought I was helping,
mm-hmm.
you see how that's personal.
And see how, and what I'm hearing too in your examples also, and I'm wondering, you know, I'm sure other people can relate in their own ways, is your own development of trust. Like, oh, that thing didn't happen that was supposed to happen, but okay, it's fine. Like, there's a trust that starts to happen in our day that things are, you know, they are what they are, and that we can sort of trust that process. And that's the same parallel with therapy, is that, you know, one of the things that I do is actually train counselors in a counselors in training, you know, to become licensed therapists in a master's program. And we always talk about how in the beginning of our training, and this would apply to, you know, coaches or any really helping professionals, that we can get in like, well, what am I going to say next? Versus stepping into a trust of the process, that like there is an unfolding, you know, that happens, and a trust. And it's, I feel like it all works to our development of trust, to trust something, you know, outside of ourselves and greater than ourselves. So thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Corinne.
Thank you for sharing. Oh, who else? Anybody else want to share? Tracy.
Hello.
And Roy, I see Roy's hand too. Hi.
So Jason was saying about the levels of mind. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if anybody's familiar with this, like this, David Hofmeister has this, it's actually levelsofmind.com.
Oh, cool.
If you go to that, then he has download your free diagram and worksheet. And it has like these step-by-step questions of like,
oh, like cool.
What your fear is. It's really good. Really good. But it's interesting how it's like the desire, he called it the desire or point of prayer. He says that in your podcast. It's so funny because I've listened to that people pleasing podcast. So
uh-huh.
And it's so good how, because you said like, you want to know truth above playing a story of Corinne. And that's just awesome. Because I find a lot of my desire point of prayer, when I boil it down and look at it, it's like, it's that people pleasing, like wanting to be approved of,
mm-hmm.
you know, wanting to, just, that's basically what it comes down to, wanting mm-hmm. to be separate, approved of. Tracy,
right,
no.
Right.
It's like when you get it, it's like, darn it, why can't, you know, asking for help to have that done and being authentically willing and wanting, not wanting to have everybody be pleased with me. It's interesting whenever you really get to the core of that. But anyway, levelsofmind.com, and he calls it the instrument for peace, is this little diagram.
Okay, awesome. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Tracy, for that resource and for sharing what you said, because I hear you. Like, you know, we whatever, approved of, liked, recognized, her, you know, what, we can go down the list of all the things that, you know, we want for the small self. And then it comes down to, you know, what do we want above all else? So thank you for what you shared. And thank you for that resource. That's awesome. Levelsofmind.com. Great. And I saw Roy's hand. Roy, did you want to share? We have about 5 minutes left.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I think what has really been helpful for me in this journey is, you know, whenever doubt comes up, and what has been actually helpful for me is to address the trauma, right? Because doubt arises because of trauma. When we get hit with a tsunami of emotions, you know, especially when you're a kid and you're a child. And I remembered being lost. I remembered when I was 6 years old, I was lost in a shopping mall and I just cried out and out. I couldn't find my mom. And that was a traumatic experience for me, right? And so what happens in trauma is your mind splinters because it's trying to protect itself from wanting to feel that again. And so I think that what has really been helpful for me in this journey is to understand why doubt occurs is we actually do believe that the separation has occurred. Now, because we believe the separation has occurred and we treat it very seriously, it has serious effects and consequences. So for me, one of the ways that's been helpful for me is to, you know, I read something along the lines of, the problem is not the doubt, the problem is not the separation, but the problem is how you're responding to it. You're treating it very seriously. So, you know, I think that definitely can be very helpful, that there's a certain sense of levity and a sense of humor about it as well. It's like, you know, I don't have to judge myself for judging myself. I don't have to judge myself for having imperfect feelings. I don't have to judge myself for having impure thoughts or separating thoughts. I don't have to keep reinforcing that within myself. And that's just becoming more and more present with what's going on with my mind. And so the healing process is, you know, the awareness is that first step to that healing process. And I think for me also, the second part, the part that really made a difference in my journey is, how do I as a person look at divinity, right? Like, how do I actually relate to, say, a concept? Because I'm very analytical, I'm very intellectual. So for me, anything that I cannot touch and feel is very esoteric and cray cray, right? so I had to learn to let that go. So I had to actually ask myself logically, if God is perfect, then, and I am a creation of divinity, then I cannot be anything less than perfect. So who is the person who is doubting? Is a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde situation? Am I actually schizophrenic? And I think all of us are to some degree, or am I actually one person? I think some of us feel like we're frauds because of, you know, we have this common experience that we're frauds, right? So I'm like, if I actually settle in and ask myself this question, well, am I one or am I many? And that actually, by settling into that question and allowing myself to drop into that question, the truth arises, because I'm starting to empty out my mind of all the judgments, all the interfering thoughts that are happening in my mind. So I thought that that could be something that could be helpful for some of us, you know, in how we actually address divinity, how we look at divinity, and also to be able to see that a lot of our guilt and a lot of the error that occurs in our mind is a result of a belief, and that we've taken that belief seriously. Mm-hmm. We've forgotten to laugh.
Mm-hmm. We've taken it so seriously. Oh, yes, we have. Thank you, Roy. Thank you, thank you. That was really, really helpful. I hear you too. And this is where we can't bypass. So I'm glad you brought up trauma, because, oh, wow, this is just where I found in my own journey that whatever it is that I need to look at, if I am not deciding how it needs to show up, for instance, I've used this example many times, and I'll just say this really quick, that I used to just, I had a difficult relationship with my dad. Every time something would happen and he'd trigger me, I'd hand it to the Holy Spirit. Then I'd do it again, and I'd hand it to the Holy Spirit. Then I'd do it again, and I'd hand it to the Holy Spirit, and nothing changed. And it was only when I realized that, wait a second, I need to be a happy learner here. There's something I need to learn. There's something I need to address, you know, that has been a pattern, a trauma, whatever that is. And so the Holy Spirit will lead us to whatever modality, however the Holy Spirit needs to meet us where we are. We will be given the opportunity, the lessons, the tools to engage in some healing work. And I'm not blocking anything anymore for that reason. Like, oh, it's not from A Course in Miracles, therefore it can't be, you know, helpful. I don't do that anymore. And so I'm just glad that you brought up the trauma, because it's a reminder for us to not stuff anything, not bypass it. As I think I've shared this before, but I had a client once say, sweep it under the rug and it just remains there for you to trip on. And this was not a course student. I just thought that was such a brilliant thing, because if we are stuffing anything, hiding anything, it just stays there like a little, you know, bump in a carpet that we trip over. And so instead we have an opportunity to look with the Holy Spirit and, you know, dive in head first. So thank you again, Roy. Any final comments, questions, insights? Yes, and surfacing attack thought interpretations that were repressed in the guilty mind and the fear of God would allow attack and might punish attack back. Yeah, we have all sorts of, yep, those attack thoughts, fear thoughts. Thank you. Thank you for that in the chat. Anybody else? Final comments, questions, insights? All good.
Doubt it.
What's that, John?
Said doubt it.
Doubt it. Happy laughter. Let's remember to laugh. Love you all. Thank you so much for joining, and I'll see you all next week. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, Carla.
Bye. Bye.
Love you all.